show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
And yes, it is, as you heard the great Boys to Men just before us say, it is so hard to say goodbye to yesterday. Before we get started on the show, please have a moment of silence for Rally Mantis number one. Although, I will say, it apparently isn't that hard to say goodbye, because the Royals already have Rally Mantis number two.
Right.
And I think this is a huge development. So it's going back on a plane again for the first time, I believe, since Rally Mantis number one bit the dust. So who knows what holds in store for Rally Mantis number two. It appears that either one of two things happened. As we learned last week on the show, two different types of praying mantis have one has a lifespan of about 4 to 6 weeks. One is 4 to 6 months. So apparently the Royals either found a 4 to 6 weeker or they found one at the end of its 4 to 6 months. Who knows? I certainly don't. But I did learn today there are over 2,000 species of mantids, which is actually what mantises are a subspecies of.
Hmm.
And most mantises that we see in North America are exotic creatures that were brought to America and are not indigenous. So The more you know. And as we will get into our show this evening, I'm sure there'll be plenty more mantis talk to come. But I, of course, am Jeff Hearn. With me, as always, is Michael Engel. Mike, my air conditioner is out, so I am sitting in a puddle of my own sweat currently just to make this show, just for all you people out there listening. So you're welcome. But aside from that, how are you doing this evening?
That's pretty much how my week's going right now. So
all right.
Though I don't have the air conditioning issue that you've had. No, it's a programming note. We won't be recording a show for next week because I work in the textbook industry and classes start next week. And it's going to be crazy. So I don't know if I'm going to have time or energy to do any podcasting. So we're going to take a week off. You're welcome, I guess. You're spared a week. No, I mean, otherwise, I really can't complain.
I'm sure you could, but you won't.
I could, but I'm not going to. You know, nobody wants to hear.
You're a good man.
My first world problems. Oh, no, my job that is stable is stressful today. It's nobody cares.
So, you know, with the reason the Rally Mantis has caught on is there's whether you want to attribute it to the magical mantis powers or not, the Royals have caught themselves in a bit of a hot stretch here. They've won 8 of their last 10. They've won 4 series in a row for the first time since May 24th, I believe it was.
Wow.
And first road series or first two consecutive road series they've won since May 10th. So it's been a little while since we've seen some of the things that the Royals are doing. And they're doing it all with the recipe that fueled 2015, right? Which was just solid to good enough pitching overall. We can kind of dive into that a little bit here in a second. And timely hitting. And they're using that to propel them to, you know, pretty good. They're right now they're sitting at 59-60. It is currently August 17th for frame of reference there. So they're playing as we record this. So by the end of tonight, they could be 500. They could be two games back. Who knows? We'll see. But they're close again. And I didn't know that they'd make it back to 500. So they've got a chance at that. And part of it has been the very, very high level of pitching that Danny Duffy has done, and not to be outdone, Yordano Ventura and Ian Kennedy have been doing pretty well themselves, haven't they?
Yeah, and it's kind of what you expected. You know, Kennedy had that awful June where, you know, he looked really bad, and you got to the point in July where there were rumors that the Royals were trying to get teams to take on his contract because, you know, signaling that maybe they thought it was a sunk cost or I don't know. Nothing came of it. It doesn't seem like maybe that was more smoke than fire. And since, you know, Kennedy's really pitched pretty well, especially in his last four games, especially since the trade deadline, you know, he's thrown very well. Yordano Ventura has been a lot more consistent and, you know, he hasn't had the best stuff, but he's kind of been getting through. You know, I think earlier in the year or early last year, some of the games that he's pitched, you might have seen him give up three or four runs where he's only giving up one, maybe two. And so that's kind of helping a lot as their kind of number three option. And you know, that's all behind Danny Duffy, who has just been incredible. You know, he's won 10 of his 11 decisions, 10 in a row, 9 in a row. You know, and it's not just that one big game against the Rays. I mean, he's solid every night out. He's getting into the seventh and beyond pretty much every night out, which is entirely different player than we ever saw. And, you know, he's among the top guys in the American League as far as starting pitching. And it, like, that's not hyperbole or homerism. It's just
damn near every category.
Yeah. Like ERA, whip, strikeouts, strikeout rate, strikeout to walk rate. I mean, he's solid and he's your number one. Kennedy's your two. Ventura's pitching is your three. You know, you look over what they've done recently. They're all pitching extremely well and it's fueling a really resurgent stretch for the Royals. You know, and even going back, I looked at their, we'll get into the numbers here in a sec, but I looked at their last four games each and their last eight games, just combined each of them in their last four starts each, not counting tonight. This goes back to July 28th. They've thrown, that's 12 starts between the three of them, 84 innings pitched, 1.71 ERA. Combined, wow. That's over a 12-start stretch. So, yeah, you're going to, you know, for a Royals offense that only basically has two regulars who are hitting at above average for the full season, you know, that's what you need. You need good pitching, and they're getting it. And even more, you know, that's what, seven innings per start? You've got,
yep,
Wade Davis, exactly, on the disabled list through that entire stretch, too. So you've got a thinned-out bullpen. And you've got guys eating innings, especially guys that you expect and would rely on to eat innings. And so it's no surprise when you get strong starting pitching that you seem to turn it around a little bit. And that's kind of the main thing. Duffy's setting the tone. And the other two are really following suit.
It's really been quite impressive. I mean, Danny Duffy, like, you know, there's a part of me that no matter how much success the Royals have had over the last 2-3 years, you know, it's old habits are hard to break, as they say. And for me, one of those old habits is always waiting for that other shoe to drop. You know, it's Jimmy Gobble has a couple good starts and then implodes. You know, it's things like that, you know, we're promised all these things. We're always told these things are going to happen and they just don't always kind of work out quite as planned. So the irrational part of my brain is saying, you're a Royals fan, something bad's going to happen. Duffy's just going to start sucking, you know, or not necessarily even sucking, but just going to, you know, 2015 Duffy having problems with pitch location and efficiency, not striking out people as much, just not going as deep into games, things like that. But the more rational side of my brain that sees Danny Duffy pitch, that sees the stats that he has below one and all the other stats that you mentioned with strikeouts to walks and the different and the ratios and everything. I mean, it's just in so incredibly impressive. Couldn't happen to a better guy too. It's just so deserved. He's just such a, he's worked so hard and dedicated himself. You can tell, you know, to becoming better, and you've seen the evolution as a pitcher starting in 2011 with a, you know, effective but incredibly wild and inconsistent approach, going through the Tommy John, working his way back to, you know, 2014, where he was a little bit more consistent but sacrificed some of his stuff, I think, trying to work to that level where he, his strikeout rate wasn't as high and his walk rate was a little bit higher than it is currently. And then you see kind of his evolution through his use of the bullpen and starting rotation the last couple of years to where he is now, where he looks really comfortable on the mound. His mechanics look sound. He's repeating his mechanics really well. His stuff looks amazing. And he just, he looks like a confident pitcher. He looks like an ace when he's out on the mound, both in results and in the way he carries himself, or whatever that's worth. And it's really awesome. I wonder sometimes how much of a trickle-down effect that that's had. You know, when you see that, and then you see, you know, every time he pitches, he's followed by Ventura and Kennedy. And so, you know, does that have an effect on them? Do they see that and it kind of rolls that way? You know, just like the Royals have had kind of contagious hitting, if you will, over the last couple of years as a big part of their success, you know, pitching can probably can be a little contagious as well. I don't know how much, you know, stock to put into that, but it's worth discussing. But, you know, one thing that I can put a lot of stock in right now is Danny Duffy. I mean, he's just been quite phenomenal right now. And Ian Kennedy, actually, he's given up one less run over this 12 game stretch, hasn't he? Mm-hmm. With his four starts. Now, granted, I believe it was six less innings. Was that what it was? I think it was David Leske, I think, was showing those stats earlier.
It was in their last four. Duffy's thrown 31.1 innings. Kennedy's thrown 26. So there's a difference there. You know, you're looking at about an inning a start, a little more than that even. The strikeouts walk ratio is pretty steep. You know, it's 33-5 for Duffy, which is, you know, it's great. It's only 6.6-1. Kennedy's is a not shabby 22-7. I mean, it's still good. But you're right. Yeah, it was four earned runs for Duffy over his last four starts. You know, for a ho-hum one earned run per start. Kennedy, though, only three earned runs. So Kennedy's maybe not getting as deep into games, but he's effective. Yes. And that's kind of what you want to see. And I think, what, three solo home runs in that stretch? Two solo home runs in that stretch. So you've got some consistency with both of those players. And Ventura's been really, you know, his last four starts, he's been pretty good too. Not quite as good, you know, 26.2 innings pitched, nine earned runs allowed in that stretch, but, you know, still good, you know. And you know, when you're looking at him as an overall group, you've got 3/5 of your starters for basically 3 weeks pitching great. And you can do a lot of damage in the standings with that kind of a turn. You know, we looked at Darren Watson on BP Kansas City, had a really nice piece on the struggles of the fifth starter spot. You know, that's been Dylan G and Chris Medlin and Chris Young and Brian Flynn and, you know, whomever. And if you just get average production from those guys, you know, even if you come close to 500, the Royals, you know, they gain about 6 or 7 games, I think is what he wrote. And that would be significant. I mean, they're a game under right now. If they were 5 games over 500 or 6 games, they'd be in a good spot. And, you know, it just shows how that consistency is really, really necessary. And the Royals haven't gotten it from a spot that they kind of thought that they would. You know, it's just, you know, it's nice to see these three guys who are supposed to be the leaders of the rotation step up to do that. Hopefully, you know, Edinson Volquez hasn't pitched great over his last few starts, but you know, if he gets something going, and if, you know, they get a little bit of something from like a Dylan G who's been pitching in that fifth spot, maybe they can do something. The other thing is, even with someone like G who's maybe not pitching great right now, he's not pitching in that kind of walking dumpster fire way that guys were earlier, where, okay, you got your fifth starter up, they're going to get through three innings and they're going to give up seven runs, and you're just killing your bullpen for a game that you're not even going to have a chance to win. You know, you're done before the fourth inning and you've still got to get through it. Now that's not happening so often. And I think that maybe that helps a lot. Maybe it's just a morale thing. I mean, you talk about the trickle down effect. I'm not sure how to really measure that. I mean, that's one of those things that you kind of have, maybe you have to chalk it up to guys seeing, hey, Duffy's pushing out here and he's just crushing it. I got to step it up too.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages.
Blasted to center. Back goes Rasmus. Grand slam, Mike Moustakas.
The Vault.
And that was Sinfonia in A Major by Sam Martini. It's noted that the third vicar of Dunshire would play that every night before delivering sermons. It's a fine piece of music. It's 10 past the hour here on Vault Public Radio. We wanted to remind you, dear listener, that this week is Pledge Week at the Vault. Your support is vital, and giving to Vault Public Radio is one way to help support your community. And speaking of community, you won't find a better friendly community than the staff at Kelly's Westport Inn. Like public radio, Kelly's is a staple of the community, a standard, an icon, a Kansas City tradition. Fine patrons like yourself have been supporting Kelly's Westport Inn since 1947, when, I'd note, that Randall Kelly poured his first pint. Contribute to Vault Public Radio today, you can get an official VPR tote bag, or you could stop by Kelly's for an affordable pint, the best pizza in town, and a few games of Papa Shot. We're grateful for your support at VPR and for your support at Kelly's Westport Inn. Enjoy the tradition. And now, 4 hours of Best of the Baroque Period, followed by the Amstein Theaters and The Horse You Rode In On, hosted by Joseph Guevara Amherst.
And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, the Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, it may be, when you listen to this, a short break for you, but it was quite a long break for Mike and I. 24 hours or so we had between the last segment. You know, sometimes adulting gets in the way of recording. My young six-month-old baby daughter, was sick yesterday, and normally we wait until after she goes to sleep and then we record, but yesterday we got her to go to sleep, but she was sick, so she woke up shortly after, so we had to cut it a little bit short, but she's feeling better today, so all is good in baby land. She's not 100%, but she's feeling better. So
day to day.
Yes, day to day.
If it was a playoff game, she could be good to go.
She could get there for a playoff game, and she would, like a Michael Jordan flu game-esque performance from my child. But
he's still pushed off.
But we'll put her on day to day. You know, if you're the Royals right now, you might not force her out on the field. But who knows? Soon, you might say, hey, we need you out there, because as of last night, while we were recording, we talked about the Royals possibly finishing the sweep of the Detroit Tigers and getting back to .500. And that's exactly what they did last night, isn't it?
It is. It was a good, I mean, they were getting no hit the whole time we were kind of recording and shortly after, and then they finally put something together. Gordon crushed a home run off of Justin Wilson, and his reaction was priceless. Just total pitcher gift thing. And then Eric Hosmer hit a homer later, and the Royals won, and Yordan Ventura had another good start. So, you know, last in the first segment, we were talking about how the Duffy and Kennedy and Ventura group has really pitched well, and Ventura added another strong start to it. So, you know, those guys are really just cruising, and you know, gets the Royals back to 500, which not too long ago that seemed kind of like a pretty big task because they just were not playing that well, and right now they are playing well, and it's getting hopes up a little bit. I mean, people are starting to kind of buy in again. You know, so that's kind of what we're talking about in this segment, about, you know, what the playoff odds are now and what kind of the best path might be. And, you know, if maybe it's too late for the Royals to actually make this kind of push, I'm not sure. If there's any one team that I would never count out after watching them over the past two, you know, late summer and into the postseason runs, it would probably be the Royals. But we're also, you know, a month and a half left in the season. It's tight. It could be a really interesting finish. It could be a really disappointing finish. We don't know yet.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting to see everyone start to kind of tip the optimism a little bit more. You know, before it was, you know, well, it was fun while it lasted, and now it's over, but the Royals have battled back. And just as you said, you know, it'd be one thing if, and we've kind of, I think we've touched on this before, but it'd be one thing if you said, like, in 2012, you know, like, oh, why couldn't the Royals just make a run, you know, at 60-60 and end up, you know, make a 30-12 run and end up 90-72 and maybe make the playoffs, you know, that why not us type of a thing. It's like, well, why not us? Because you've got about 30 years of shit. That's why not you, you know, at that time. But now you look at this team, and just as you said, you know, we've seen them do it before. And we saw it in 2014, they were 48-50, and they ended up making the playoffs. Now, granted, they didn't win the division. They got the wild card, and who knows how feasible that is this year. But they had longer to go and less to make up, I believe, at that time. But, you know, even still, point being, you know, they had that type of a run, and then they had a good run last year. They had a couple times last year where they were just killing it. In 2015, obviously, when you go 95-67, that's, you're going to do that a few times in a season. So, you know, this is something where we've seen it before from this team, and we know they're capable of a 30-12 type stretch. So it's just a matter of, you know, do we think this team as constructed today can actually do that? And what else has to happen in order for them to, because, you know, 30-12 is a very high watermark. So say we're at, you drop it down a little bit, make it 28-14, right? So just win two of every three games the rest of the way. Okay, so if that's where you're at, that puts you at 88 wins. You know, last couple of years, that's made the playoffs in as a second wild card or first wild card, even the last couple of years. So, you know, that's a decent bet. But this year, there's a lot of teams kind of log jammed there. So it's, you know, where are the Royals at? What needs to happen? And, you know, obviously the first thing they need to do is just win, and the rest will kind of take care of itself. But for you personally, when you look at this team, you know, do you think there, and not just like in the scheme of like anything's possible vein, but like legitimately, do you think this team has a 28-14 run in them to get even to the point where they're sniffing the playoffs?
I don't know. They definitely would need the pitching to work out, and it has, and that's why they're kind of back into this conversation. They've got a lot to make up from July, which was just terrible. It was such a bad month. And, you know, just the whole season, they've really struggled with that fifth starter spot, and Dylan G is starting tonight. So that's the difficulty, is that, okay, you've got these three guys, but is it you know, are they going to all three, Kennedy, Ventura, Duffy, are they all going to pitch well the rest of the way? If they do, that gives you pretty much 60% of the time through the rotation, you've got a really good shot of winning the game. And, you know, if you win, let's say 60% of the time, that's about 25-17. So if you end up with Edinson Volquez pitching better, or maybe the Royals sneak in an extra starter to replace Dylan G, or Edinson Volquez is really more consistent and the other guys are still strong, then maybe, yeah, we're starting to see where Paulo Orlando has hit well all of August. Chesler Cuthbert has been pretty consistent all season long. You know, Salvador Perez has slumped recently, but we've seen him get hot before. Lorenzo Cain is starting to kind of work back into some kind of a groove. And Alex Gordon, I think, has, what, an 8-game hitting streak? He's homered in the last two games. Mm-hmm. Eric Hosmer was looking terrible. I mean, just like a 2-month-long slump. He's hitting the ball on the ground like 60% of the time. Just, you know, for every – as good as he looked when we were anointing him as a superstar, he looked just as just bland and plain and uninteresting and unsubstantial. And now he's maybe starting to get something back. So if you get to a point where you've got Kane, Hosmer, Gordon, Orlando, and Cuthbert all hitting, you just kind of need the rest of the guys to be kind of average. And you might be able to just do it if the pitching is there. Wade Davis is probably due to come back. You know, the bullpen has kind of gotten a rest over the last couple of weeks because the starting pitching has been better. If there was a team that was poised to make that kind of a run, it might be a team like the Royals, who have done it before, who have that kind of team chemistry, that kind of aura of never surrendering. I mean, think about it like this. We've talked about this off air. If you're a team ahead of the Royals and you start to see them go, like, let's say they win like 8 games in a row, and they get to that point where, okay, now they're a legitimate threat. Do you want to be looking down and seeing them approach you? I mean, that's like, that's something gaining on you. That's a team that you know has been in tough spots and made improbable comebacks each of the last couple of years, and they're coming for you. I mean, I know that we like to be analytical as much as we can, and you know, we try not to discount the intangibles, but that's got to have some kind of an effect where you've got teams that maybe aren't used to playing for these kind of spots trying to, you know, just hold on and kind of keep a grasp on a playoff spot or staying in contention or things like that. That's some pressure. And, you know, maybe that will factor in. Maybe that gives them an extra 5% chance of maybe doing something. But it really does come down to they've got to play as well as they can. Last year, you know, that 95 win pace was a 586 winning percentage, and that's, you know, that's about a 25-17 finish, which would be about 85 wins. I don't know if that gets it done. So, you know, with all the teams that they've got ahead of them, I don't know. You know, they've got Yankees, the Astros, the
Blue Jays are winning the division. Orioles,
Red Sox, and Mariners. So they've got to jump a couple of those teams. So it's possible, you know, and maybe the wild card is their best bet for that because, you know, it's just, it will take fewer wins. But at the same time, you know, you've got a lot of teams that you got to jump over there, and it's a lot of things that are out of their control. So it's going to start with them winning. And if they play well enough to win and go on a big run, go on a tear, then yeah, that's good odds. It's, I don't know how likely it is, but I'm ready to buy into it.
Yeah, and you know, they, I mean, last year, were the Astros and the Yankees both had 86 wins, I think, for the playoffs. So, and obviously this year, you know, is different, but you know, it's the last couple of years. You think so? Even if you say, okay, the 580 winning percentage is 25-17, you know, say they sneak a couple extra wins in there, and they're, you know, 27-15 now, and so then they're 87-75 to finish the season. You know, I mean, in a lot of years in recent memory, mean, that's decent enough. That's probably made the playoffs as a second wild card. I mean, you look at when the Royals lost to the Giants. The Giants had 88 wins. They played the A's in the wild card game. A's had 88 wins that year. Royals themselves had 89. So, you know, it's in that ballpark. It's just a matter of, you know, all the teams in front of the Royals that we mentioned, you know, just from statistically speaking and just from history, what we know, one of those teams is going to completely fall out of the race. It might be the Royals, who knows? But, mm-hmm. you know, one of those teams is just going to fall off and end up close to 500. You know, that's just kind of the way it usually works. So you can probably count out one team. Which team? I don't know. I have no guess. If I had to make a guess, I'd say that the Mariners are probably a good candidate, and maybe the Astros as well. But you never know, you know, who it's going to be. But then, you know, when you look at the division, you almost could make an argument that that's probably their best bet. And, you know, the Cleveland has quite a big lead right now on the Royals at 9 games. But a couple things to put in perspective here. So Cleveland got out to their big lead in the division with a fantastic June. They were 22-6 in the month of June. So they were pretty 16 good. Games. Yeah. So there's 16 games over 500 in 1 month. Mm-hmm. And they're 18 games over 500 right now. So the rest of the season, mm-hmm. they've been playing 2 games over 500, essentially. Basically a 500 team. You know, and they had a 14-game winning streak in there in June. So really, you know, outside of that really hot stretch, you can't just remove it from them. That's not fair to the mm-hmm. to Cleveland. But at the same time, yeah. But at the same time, you know, when you look at the Royals last year, they definitely had some good streaks and put together some good runs of like 15 out of 20 wins and that kind of a thing. But you know, overall, they were more consistent month to month in terms of having good months than Cleveland. Because you look at Cleveland and they were, you know, 10-11 in April, 16-13 in May, 12-12 in June, and 8-8 in August so far. You know, so that their lead has been extended after that gap a little bit, maybe mostly just because the Royals and the Tigers have just kind of middled out and or declined as well. So, you know, if the Royals make a charge and Cleveland is sitting there, just like you said, looking at, oh man, you know, here come the Royals. They're playing good. They always seem to have their second half team, right? So it's definitely got to be scary. And then you say, okay, Royals have, let's count them up here. How many games they have left this season? So obviously they've got 42 games left this season, and they've got six against
Cleveland. Yep,
including the final 3 games of the season in Kauffman.
Yep.
So. You know, and they've got, let's see, talking about, okay, they're 3 games behind Detroit right now, and they've got, let's see, 6 games left with Detroit as well. So, you know, they can wipe out Detroit, assuming they, you know, both Royals and Detroit play evenly, and they can wipe them out on their own. And then they're going to need a little help from Cleveland, but it can start with, you know, winning. I think you have to win 5 of the 6 at least, if not sweep all 6 against Cleveland. So you've got that. They did themselves a big favor by sweeping Detroit, finishing that sweep last night. But then you've also got, in turn, looking at the wild card, and you've got the Red Sox in a series coming up. You've got the Yankees in a series coming up. There are 2 games now behind the Yankees, or they were yesterday. I haven't looked today.
It's just one.
Just one. Okay, so
one behind the Yankees and Astros both.
So 2 weeks from now, they have a series against the Yankees in Kauffman where, you know,
normal dimensions on the fences.
Yeah. So as of right now, if they're only 1 game behind, they just take 2 out of 3 from the Yankees. They're tied. They sweep the whole thing, and they're above the Yankees right there.
Yeah, and Yankees have sold off most of their guys. So
yeah, they're kind of just – it's actually amazing with what they've done that they've been able to stay where they are. So good for them, I guess. And then the rest of the way, you've got, you know, let's see. They're starting a 4-game series with Minnesota tonight mm-hmm. at home. They've got another 3-game series against Minnesota, or 2 more 3-game series against Minnesota, so one at home, one on the road.
A quarter of their remaining games are against the Twins.
Yeah, so you've got 10 games against the Twins. Say you win 8 of those games, right? And then they've got a four-game series against Oakland, who's terrible. They've got,
seven against the White Sox.
Yeah, seven against the White Sox.
They've won 9 out of 12 so far against the White Sox this year.
Yeah, and the White Sox are kind of teetering. So you've got they're teetering towards completely falling off, I should say. So really, you've got Miami, you got Boston, and you got Cleveland. And that's really it for what you look at on your schedule as pretty tough. And with Cleveland, they're going to be really motivated because division, they can really help their cause at trying to get back into the race by beating them. The biggest thing that worries you got, I didn't mention Miami. Miami's in the playoff race in the NL. So they are a threat as well. So you got this four-game series against Minnesota. They need to take 3 out of 4 here, and that'll put them in decent shape as they head on the road trip to play Miami and Boston. And then, I mean, say the Royals take 3 out of 4 from Minnesota. How are you feeling, and what do you think going into that? Is that the most critical 6-game stretch of the season?
Maybe. I mean, at least it's... It's definitely those are the two series back to back on the road against good teams. If you look, you know, just looking at this, the Royals are 9-4 this year against the Tigers. And so even though the Tigers are above 500, I wouldn't say that's a team that the Royals are overmatched by. You know, Miami, they played pretty well all year. Boston has been good. And you know, Red Sox seem to always play the Royals pretty tough. And then there's Cleveland, and Cleveland has, you know, played a little better than the Royals head-to-head this year. So those are really 4 series out of the remaining, you know, 10 series for the rest of the year that are really kind of like, okay, these could be struggles. So if the Royals do well in those, if they come out, like let's say they win 3 out of 4 against the Twins and they win each of the next 2 series, yeah, you're looking pretty good at that point because that's 2, 4,
let's see,
9,
5, 7.
I mean, that's a 9-3 stretch right there. So they're 69-63.
Wait. So out of the next 10 games, they'd win 7.
Or no, the 7. Right. 7.
67
and 63. I'm math good. I math real good.
You're lucky I'm an accountant.
Right.
To be honest. Yeah, 67-63 at that point. But let's see, what's Boston's record right now?
They got 67 wins themselves at the moment.
So you're pulling them, you know, 2 losses closer towards you with whatever they do in the process. Mm-hmm. So right now Boston's got like a 7-game lead-ish because Boston and Baltimore are tied, right? They were yesterday. Like I said, I haven't looked today. Let's pull this. Hold on. So let's see. Wild card. Boston and Baltimore. Boston actually has a 1-game lead over Baltimore right now. Yeah, they're 67-52. You're right. So, you know, the Royals would bring them, let's see, they have a 7.5-game lead right now over the Royals. So assuming all else was equal, you'd drop that down to 4.5 with 32 games to play.
Yep.
Which is very doable. I mean, you remember Boston knows all about collapses, right? Was it 2011? I mean, they had, how big was that lead they had with just a couple months left in the season and just saw it evaporate?
Even last year, the Royals had that September where they finished 11-17, and for a week or so, they looked like they forgot how to play baseball entirely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was a matter of pretty significant angst.
I thought they were going to be one and done.
Yeah, I was like,
oh, even Royals fans.
Like, they're not going to, you know, are they going to be able to flip the switch again and get back to it? And people were skeptical with good reason. They were playing terrible baseball for a while, and they did get it right back. So that's something that any of these teams could run into. It, you know, wouldn't surprise me a whole lot. Plus, you've got, you know, a team like, you know, Boston, you talk about them, they're going to have to play against Toronto a couple of times yet. They still have to play Baltimore a couple of times. So, you know, in this case, I think you kind of have to root, if you're looking for wild card, you kind of have to look at the division leaders going on a tear and helping to beat, you know, the Rangers beat the Mariners up. The Blue Jays beat up both the Orioles and the White Sox. The Royals keep winning. Maybe that means you don't catch Cleveland. you know, because Cleveland's taking out Detroit and helping you out there, but the Royals beat them. So, you know, then maybe they can sneak in. It's such a weird and tough scenario when you've got teams that might just be trading wins, you know, because if Boston beats Baltimore and then Baltimore beats Boston, doesn't really help you a whole lot.
Yeah, you're not putting yourself in a good position.
You know, it's not a position where you can really jump up and catch those guys. So I don't know. I can't decide which is a more advantageous way. I almost think that, you know, like you alluded to earlier, that if you're going to – maybe Cleveland is the team that you want to be trying to catch just because it's basically – you know, not to discount Detroit, but it's basically just one team you need to catch. And if the Royals do something like 26-16 and the Indians go 18-26, well, then you can catch them. You tie up with them. If they're just a 500 team, then the Royals, you know, if they go that 30-12, which is doable but difficult – you know, then you catch them again, you know, so it's, you know, it just kind of depends on how Cleveland's able to finish up. And if they do have some kind of a collapse like the Royals and they finish like, say, six games under, well, you know, then you do end up at a point where the Royals, you might have an easier path to catch them versus trying to leapfrog four or five other teams.
Yeah. And the biggest benefit and the only reason why you might think Cleveland would be possible to catch is because they play them. So right now, the only team, I mean, you look at New York, Houston, Detroit, Seattle, Baltimore, Boston, all ahead of them. You know, the only teams they play are Boston, Detroit, and you know, the Indians I didn't list because they're not they're leading, so they're not technically in the wild card right now. But so, you know, only two teams of the, let's see, what is it? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 ahead of them that they actually play. In terms of just for the wild card, you know, so that's four other teams you got to hope do you some favors. But with Cleveland, you know, you just got, like you said, you've just got the one team. You just got to hope they give you some favors by losing some games. And then you take care of business when you play them, and then you're in good shape, you know. So if Cleveland goes, stays 500, and the Royals are playing better than 500 and take 5 out of 6 from Cleveland, I mean, that's immediately right there. That's four games that you're just wiping out right there. So now it's a 5-game lead instead of a 9-game lead. And so, I mean, this is, you know, it would be so much fun to have, like, obviously the playoffs are so much fun, but it would, like, that last series of the year, you know, if it was like they came in and the Royals were, you know, a game back or something, and, you know, so winning 2 out of 3 meant the Royals would win the division, and something like that. Like, that would just be super fun. I guess that wouldn't be, I guess that would, they'd make them tied.
They would end
but
up tied.
If they were tied, you know, or something. But then you'd have a scenario where you'd have the 3-game series, the Royals would tie it up out of winning, and then I think they'd probably play each other again, right, for the tiebreaker.
Mm-hmm.
And then the winner would be the division. And that'd be even funnier if you had the tiebreaker for the division, and then if the loser was then in another tiebreaker for a wild card. And so, I mean, you could have just two chaos. Essential playoff games before the 1-game playoff, which would be kind of fun. Kind of a crazy end of the season. But,
and then if you do make the wild card, eventually you probably have to play Cleveland again.
Exactly. You probably have to play them in the next round.
Jeez, so. You know, just crazy. Yeah, that would be nerve-wracking.
It'd be a lot of fun, though.
Oh, yeah. I mean, at this point, you know, if they got to that stage after the season they've had, maybe it'd be a little looser because the Royals had already won a World Series. We've already gotten through all the, you know, the kind of anxiety from the last two playoff seasons.
That's kind of what I was thinking.
And it's like, well, shoot, you got nothing to lose.
Just let loose, man. Cleveland would have all the pressure because they would be the one that let the Royals catch them. Mm-hmm. They would be the ones that they haven't had, you know, 60 some years since they've. I mean, the Cavaliers won a championship, but since Cleveland has won, the Indians, you know, I mean, 60 some odd years.
it'd be a vintage Cleveland pressure. Collapse.
Yes, it would. That would be so fantastic.
And for a city like that that has so much sports sadness, it would probably go into some documentary. They'd have to redo that. What, Factory of Sadness? Was that the name of the documentary?
Factory of Sadness?
Yeah, someone called them at one time. Maybe that was the Brown Stadium. They called it the Factory of Sadness because just it's such a tortured city sports-wise. And, you know,
well, it's kind of funny they call the Browns. Yeah, the main fan section for the Browns being the dog pound. And, like, that's a very sad thing when you think about it because most dogs in the pound end up dying.
You don't want to be in the dog pound.
No. So,
not a place to go. I don't know. I'm really encouraged by the stretch where the Royals, they go to Minnesota, then to the White Sox, and then they come home to play the A's and the White Sox again. So that's like right in the middle of their next few series. You know, it's, you know, right there at the, I think that's early September or something like that. So that could be really fun because those are some soft, soft teams. I mean, they're combined against like Detroit and Minnesota and Chicago. They're a combined 25-9 this season against those teams. I mean, that's just what it, you know, they're beating the teams they should beat usually. And they're struggling against teams that are better than them or close to even with them, but they're kind of starting to get it back now. So it's, you know, that's where, you know, you want to believe, you know, it's, and maybe it is something where they have nothing to lose. They may as well go for it. They may as well try to, you know, play as loose as they can. And that's kind of a style that suits them. And if that means that the pressure turns over to the other teams who are trying to hold a lead, great. You know, that works out in their favor, I think, in the end.
Yeah. And, you know, I'd really be curious to know. I mean, we'll never know, really, but curious to see, I guess, how much the fact, you know, okay, like you mentioned earlier, Mike, the seeing the Royals climbing up that leaderboard and knowing what they've done in the past, and they are still the defending World Series champions. So, I mean, if you're Cleveland or I don't know if that, you know, makes them a little tighter. Maybe they're watching that scoreboard a little closer in the outfield and it causes, you know, maybe they make a mistake they shouldn't. Who knows? You know, and then you wonder what kind of effect that has on the playoffs. I mean, you know, teams, you'd have to be like, oh, crap, you know, playing the Royals. If you're in the playoffs, last place, a team built like the Royals, the last place you want to see them is the playoffs in a short game series where anything can happen. I mean, just ask every team they've beat the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's, you know, a lot of teams, you know, last year was obviously different, but 2014, I mean, they had no business beating any of those teams they beat, really, but they took care of business. And I shouldn't say no business, but, you know, they were, when you on paper, they were not the better team, but it's baseball and it's playoffs and the Royals won a pennant. So you never know.
Get hot at the right time. I mean, the thing is that some people have referenced is when the Indians in the movie Major League went on their run, they were 60-60.
There you go.
That's what happened.
And boom. Then,
and they went on that. I think they finished with like 92 wins or something in the movie is what it worked out. So they did like 32-10 for the rest of the year. Got a tiebreaker with the Yankees. And then obviously, spoiler alert, won.
Yeah.
But Squeak, then they lost to the White Sox in the ALCS, but beat them the next year. So
that's what happens. You know, what are you going
to
do?
Then they all went to the minor leagues.
We don't talk about those times.
Right, right. But Jake Taylor wasn't around either.
No. You can't have
Scott Bakula was their manager in the.
Yeah, and that's just, I mean, you know, as good as Roger Dorn may or may not be, he is no Jake Taylor, that is for certain.
Yeah. I think we should just forget that Back to the Minors ever happened though, because that movie sucked.
I pretty much have. I've never even seen it. I gotta be honest with you. Never even seen it.
Don't do it. Though it does have Ted McGinley, who's the kiss of death for basically any show except for, I think, The West Wing, because he had a guest spot a couple of times and they
Ted,
still
had
a couple.
I must not have got, like, we tried to watch the whole series recently and or like over the last, you know, like year and a half, just kind of sporadically when we can. We're through like halfway through season six, so it must be later then.
He's only in maybe like two episodes. He's a broadcaster, so he's just a kind of a talking head. It's not really a formative role. He's maybe 30 minutes of screen time total, but he still appeared. Usually he's, I guess Married with Children had a pretty decent run with him, but Sports Night got wiped out, and he was on that, and There were, I think, two or three other shows or movie franchises that died off. Anyway, he was in Back to the Minors, and he sucked, which was also focused on the Minnesota Twins. I don't think there's been a Royals themed baseball movie yet. We've had
not yet.
We've
but
had
there should be.
Twins for that one. We've had Little Big League. We're just this is our.
They're very well friendly. Maybe in the future actually.
The Indians, obviously with Major League, Tigers got For Love of the Game, and that's then right. White Sox. Eight Men Out, I guess would count, even though it's not really like the modern. But still, it's the White Sox.
Who, what was the one? Dennis Quaid was the guy who he was in his 30s, and he was at the Mariners?
That was the Rays.
Rays, okay.
Who got him, yeah.
Okay.
And then there was, let's see, Steve Nebraska, so Yankees. There's one, I forget the movie, it had Edward James Olmos in it, and it was about this pitcher who gets taken by the Angels. And there's a lot of games against the Royals in that one. It was from like 84 or something. That's probably about as close as you get.
There was the scout. That was the Yankees.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The one with Brendan Fraser and Albert Brooks.
Yeah. Let's see. The Fan was the Giants.
Oh, yep. Yep. Moneyball was the A's, of course.
Right.
The Fan. Actually, there's a guy, a friend of mine at work, talk about that every once in a while. Just randomly, it'll come up.
Never seen it. I just remember that. Oh, Wesley Snipes in a baseball movie. I never saw
it. Benicio del Toro was in it too. That was one of his early roles.
Really?
Where he was like, yeah. Huh. He was. I won't spoil for you anything, but he had an interesting role in it.
Okay. Let's see.
Another... There's got to be other ones, right?
There's a lot of really old baseball.
Oh,
movies.
Fever Pitch, right? Yeah, the Red Sox. Oh, yeah. Essentially. About the Red Sox.
Yeah.
Let's see here. There's been a lot, but there should be one about the Royals. But if you need any more evidence, though, something to look at here. The Royals in 2014 from July 22nd, so close to when the Royals started their recent run, until... September 5th, they went exactly 30-12.
So it's been done.
Hat tip to Dave Leske for tipping me off about or tipping us off about that particular run. But I went and looked it up to see the exact dates, and that's where it is. That was the exact run they went on there.
Late, but still, you know.
Yeah. After they were 48-50 instead of 58-60, which is when they started this run.
Yeah.
So, but they,
possible.
Yeah. You know, I mean, they were 48-50 and they were 8 games back instead of being 58-60 and 10 games back. So, I mean, you know, more time, less games back, all that kind of stuff. But they didn't win the division either that year and still made it. So, you know. Who knows? Also of note, I got married during that stretch. And ever since then, they've been the best team in baseball. So I don't know. You know, you tell me. But it's a good sign is all I'm saying. So my wife and I just celebrated our 2-year anniversary. And I've only seen the playoffs win as the Royals make the playoffs as a married man. So I'm hoping that continues.
That would be that'd be something that in like 10 years you'd have a feature story written about you.
Yes, after 10 straight playoff appearances.
Right.
That's what'll happen. So we'll leave with this, Mike. Give me one thing. We've obviously been optimistic talking about playoff chances, but in reality it's like a 6% chance, which is actually tripled since last night, which I think it was like a 2% chance, but
woohoo.
I know, right? So in all reality it's probably not going to happen, but in the case that it doesn't happen, what are you most looking forward to for the rest of this? And let's take Danny Duffy off the table. I think that's too obvious
right
of a thing. He's must see baseball right now when he pitches for the Royals. So taking him off the table, what's the one thing that you're going to keep your eye on the most as the Royals finish out the season, assuming they wouldn't make the playoffs?
If it's one thing, I'd like to see Yordano Ventura have some consistency and maybe even dominance as some kind of precursor for next year, to really make next year feel like, you know, 2017, we know that's the window closing theoretically, unless some money gets handed out. So if they're able to start next year with a really strong Duffy and a really strong Ventura to complement him, they're in okay shape. They just would then have to basically be average-ish on offense and have like no dumpster fires in the rotation. You know, you can have a bad pitcher in the rotation. You just can't have a complete pothole, basically. And so if Ventura is able to really be a strong number two behind Duffy, that would end up making me feel pretty okay about the season, even if the Royals miss the playoffs.
Yeah, and you know, that's kind of one thing that we've talked about all season that's really been one of the main differences is that when the Royals pitchers have been bad, this last year when they were bad, they were still in the game. But this year when they've been bad, they've just been horrendous. Yep. And so I'm going to pull this up really quick since we're talking about it. So like, okay, in blowouts, which is 5-plus runs either way, winning or losing, the Royals are, they were 21-20 in, and this is 2014 I'm looking at, since it's probably more similar than last year to this team. And this year, the current Royals are 12-21, you know, so quite a bit of difference there. And then in one run games, that 2014 team was actually 22-25, which is surprising. I would have thought they were better than that. But yeah, this year, the team is 17-15, you know, so the one run games have gone about the way you would expect. I actually would think 17-15, you know, there's the Royals specifically have left some on the table this year that they hadn't in the last couple of years, you know? So, that's kind of another thing that I think for me, I'll be looking at, mainly with a pitcher by the name of Matt Strom, who got his first major league win last night. Coming in relief for Yordano Ventura, you know, it's definitely going to be interesting to see. And I think last night's performance by Ventura was a good start towards that. What do you have? 7 strikeouts and 2 walks and 6 2/3.
Yeah, and he wasn't particularly sharp. He was just kind of
Watch. Like I said, sick baby. I wasn't able to watch the whole thing, mm-hmm. but you know, his stat line looked pretty good.
He's had a lot of those games where he's not at his best, but he finds a way. And in some sense, you don't want that because eventually he's not going to have it or find the way out. But on the other hand, that's the mark of a really good pitcher a lot of times, is how they perform when they don't have electric stuff. And, you know, Ventura is able to kind of learn from that and figure something out. You know, that could be a pretty optimistic kind of thing, too. Since you mentioned Strom, he gave up a run in his first 2 appearances, but not since. So trending very nicely in that sense.
And
he's struck out 11 in 6.1 innings.
So there you go. I mean, he looks, and he's got a 0.9 whip, a 16.2 strikeout per 9 ratio right here, a 6, an even 6 strikeout to walk ratio. So, you know, here's a guy who, and I do believe, and I think the Royals believe, that there is still a strong possibility of him being a starter in his career. But as of right now, he's a good reliever, and if you don't need him desperately, you can still kind of ease him in, and he can at least pull a Duffy type situation and start next year in the bullpen. And I think when you look at him, I'm paying attention so much because it's going to tell you a lot about the bullpen next year, because there's no guarantee Hochaver is going to be back. You're going to have Wade Davis back, but he's been battling injuries. Hopefully he's the same. I assume he will be for next season, you know, but who knows? So you want to make sure that the Royals, the strength that they've built this thing on, the bullpen, is able to keep churning out those guys. And maybe they re-sign Holland again. I think there's a really good chance of that happening, you know, but who knows how effective he's going to be. They'll have Soria. So you've got, you know, it's you want to see them to be able to still maintain that high level. And so to him to have this type of success, and if he can continue it for the rest of the season, that's going to be very, you know, very, very good to see looking into next season. Because if you can go in like you were talking about with the rotation of having, you know, Guile having Duffy, Ventura, Kennedy as your 1-2-3 for next season, and then, you know, I mean, I think if the Royals give Ensign Volquez as a qualifying offer, I think there's a decent chance he takes it. So, you know, if Volquez is your number four, you're doing okay. And Jason Vargas has had rehab starts this season. He's in Double A, just had a start last night, I believe.
Yep.
So I didn't see the line on that to see how well he did, but just a rehab start by next season, you know, he'll have a full. He theoretically should be fully recovered. So, I mean, you could be, you know, your fifth starter spot that's been so much trouble this year could be less of a problem next year if Jason Vargas can be even some of what he was previously, you know. So the starting rotation figures to be in decent shape next year, hopefully. But the bullpen, I think, might actually be a bigger question mark at this point. So seeing Matt Strom have this success has been really, really positive sign for me.
Yep, he strikes me kind of as like a Brandon Finnegan type role right now where, okay, I mean, he's probably someone down the line you want to see if he can start, but right now he's got such good stuff, you want to utilize it out of the bullpen, and if that's the way to bring him in, then great. That's how Saberhagen and Gubaza and so many Baltimore Orioles pitchers way back when came in, and, you know, if it's something that works for Strom, and it obviously worked for Duffy, and it helped Greinke, and, you know, down way back when, hey, you know, it's worth a shot. And if it means that he gets some confidence and kind of figures something out, then yeah, I agree, that's a good guy to watch for the rest of the year. Plus, it's, you know, it's fun to see those guys come up and start, you know, lighting it up on the radar gun and getting good stats and pitching well and kind of giving some hope for, you know, whatever role he's going to have in the future.
Yeah, and it's been a little while since, you know, almost really the last three seasons, we haven't really seen any young guys come up and have a huge ton of success. So to see like Strom and like Chester Cuthbert come up and have some good success gives you even a little bit more hope, especially in Terrain Mondesi as well, who hit his first home run the other night off of Justin Verlander, which has to be a pretty good thrill for that kid. So, you know, there's some positive things to watch, even if the Royals don't make the playoffs. That'll portend large for next season. So we'll leave you with that on this evening or morning or noon or whenever, whenever you're listening to the show. So thank you so much for listening. Of course, we're always so appreciative of listeners. Couldn't do it without you. Thank you so much for emailing and talking to us on Twitter, interacting with us. We really appreciate it. Love to hear from all the fans. So thank you so much for listening. We'll be here the rest of the way. Hopefully it's an exciting end of the season for the Royals as we come here down the last quarter of the season. Going to be a lot of stuff to talk about, and we're going to be here for all of it. So stay tuned. We'll see you next time. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com.